From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. When was the last time you visited a locally owned restaurant that didn't offer some regionally sourced ingredient? Some would say the farm-to-table phenomenon is a full-blown element of the North Carolina restaurant landscape, along with the explosion of craft beer, cocktails, and boutique donuts. Wilmington boasts a foodie scene in spite of serious challenges facing new restaurateurs. Today, we're exploring emerging food trends in the Cape Fear region with two food experts. Jessica Maurer covers the local restaurant scene through her weekly column, The Restaurant Roundup, in the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. She also contributes to Wilma and Wilmington magazines. Jessica Maurer, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Paul Stephen came to the Star News as a photographer, but it didn't take long for his passionate peons to lunch to catapult him onto the food writing staff. Because he writes about a wide range of lifestyle issues, he is the self-described domestic goddess of the Star News. Paul Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Have you observed a new local trend? Do you know where to find the best ribs, unpredictable salads, or the most unexpected craft cocktails? What's the strangest dish you've found locally? Give us a call and tell us about it at 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @coastlinehqr. And we have to start with barbecue because today Governor Pat McCrory relaunched the barbecue wars. He has entered into a friendly bet with South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley over tomorrow night's game between the University of North Carolina Tar Heels and the South Carolina Gamecocks. So whichever governor loses is going to get a shipment of barbecue from the winning state. And of course, that opens a whole bunch of questions for North Carolina barbecue because we have our own internal war in the state between Eastern and Western barbecue. Paul Stephen, which one do you think Governor McCrory should ship to Haley if we win?
I'm a West Virginia transplant. I've been in Eastern North Carolina for 12 years and absolutely in love with the stuff.
And can you describe it for those who aren't familiar with the nuances?
So here on the eastern side of the state, we like our whole hog barbecue, and we like it with a vinegar sauce, and I could not agree more.
Jessica Maurer.
I have to agree. I'm eastern all the way when it comes to North Carolina barbecue.
What is the newest food trend that we are seeing playing out locally now, Jessica Maurer?
Well, we definitely have seen a lot of donuts. We've seen, new donut shops opening and trendy kinds of donuts, all kinds of new flavors, that kind of thing. So that's been sort of a fun trend. I think we've seen a lot with burgers and a lot of places, really jazzing up their menu as far as the burgers that they offer. And Wilmingtonians, I think, are really in search of that great burger and something new and different to go on top of it.
How do you jazz up a burger?
Well, I think just by offering a wide variety of different toppings, everything from fried eggs to, fried onions and all kinds of different things, to make that burger a little bit more interesting than just your lettuce, tomato, your traditional toppings. I mean, you're seeing all kinds of gourmet cheeses on burgers, burgers topped with other meats like brisket and things like that, things like kale and arugula and not just, plain lettuce anymore. Just so it runs the gamut of all kinds of sort of, more upscale gourmet toppings.
And Paul Stephen, forgive me, I think the Star News, Port City Foodies, did an article not too long ago about the most hoped for burger joints that might come to this region. Does that ring a bell for you? And I think Farm Burger was at the top.
Yeah, well, there were about a dozen establishments. The what she was describing, the gourmetification of the hamburger in places that are both fast casual type sort of quick serve restaurants has exploded tremendously in the last 4 or 5 years. And we've had a couple who have announced their intent to open in the region, and that just fueled the fire for even more from readers from outside of the region who might have encountered a burger somewhere else across the country that they just desperately want. But it's not just new ones. There are plenty of people who are still crying for White Castle and Culver's and these sort of regional Midwestern or Northeastern type burgers.
Harking back to one's childhood,
exactly,
perhaps.
Exactly.
Paul Stephen,
Do you feel pressure? Will you talk about this relationship that you have with some of our local restaurateurs? You have made it clear that you are not a food critic, and that is not your role at the Star News. But within your role, how do you navigate this balance between responsible journalism, answering to the listener, and being honest about what you're finding and still maintaining those relationships?
Well, to me, one of the most interesting things about covering the food scene in Wilmington is that the entrepreneurs who go into this industry, this is a cutthroat industry. The margins are razor thin and always have been. Nobody's getting filthy rich in kitchen work. And to meet these entrepreneurs who are putting their passion and their love onto those plates every day, regardless of whether or not their concept goes over well, whether or not their location's right, I mean, there are countless conflicts stacked against them from a business perspective. So for me, meeting these people and trying to communicate their passion in a way that remains objective and does maintain that balance between what my readers need to know and how much respect that I have for them as entrepreneurs has certainly been challenging. At the end of the day, it's the person reading the story who I have to answer to, and regardless of what my feelings are about these entrepreneurs and the love that they're putting into their effort, if something's not right, we've got to call it out. But again, that's not so much my job.
And Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, you have observed before that you think people can be very critical of new efforts. And you actually told our producer, Isabel Shepherd, that if a restaurant doesn't open with its A game, it's going to be really hard for that establishment to regain ground. What is a mistake that a restaurant could make upon opening that you would say is forgivable and maybe people shouldn't be so hard on them?
Well, I think one of the mistakes that is forgivable, that not everyone is always forgiving of this, but one of the things that's forgivable, I think, sometimes is a little bit of, not having your customer service up to 100% at the beginning of opening. You know, there's a lot of kinks to work out between kitchen and front of house staff. And to me, that's something that's forgivable. But if your food is not up to standard from the beginning, I think that's something that most diners are not going to be as forgiving of. The quality of the food, the presentation, and the consistency from the start really has to be there, I think. I think people are willing to give service perhaps a second chance, but if the food is not, you know, up to par from the start, not necessarily so.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with local food writers Jessica Maurer, who writes the Restaurant Roundup for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, and Paul Stephen of Port City Foodies at the Star News. If you have a question or a comment about the local food scene, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And we pose the following question on Twitter. What's your favorite restaurant in the Cape Fear region? Darwin tweets back, Szechuan 132. And there's a big smile from both of our food writers, Paul Stephen.
I've had a chance to get to know the owner, Joseph, over there at Szechuan over the last few years, and there is no greater gentleman in the food service industry in this city. Nearly every time I go over there, he wants to pull me into the kitchen and teach me how to make something, and I can't help but have a huge warm heart for him.
And George from Wilmington says both guests showed a preference to Eastern barbecue, but they didn't mention Western. Can they detail the difference? Good point, George. Jessica Maurer, or either.
I don't know that I can speak. I have not had as much Western North Carolina barbecue. I think it's more of what I consider a traditional barbecue sauce, a thicker, more ketchup-based sauce. Is that right, Paul?
You'll find more tomato prevalent in the sauce. Also, there's a preference for pork shoulder rather than the whole hog. We like to go whole hog on the East Coast, and you'll find a different cut more common there.
And is that cut fattier, or is it less fatty?
Just very specific. It's a shoulder roast, generally speaking. But yeah, it's not entirely different, and every bit is delicious.
So when North Carolina is written about on a national level, it's so often about barbecue. Are there things that the national state, people who write at the national level, are missing about North Carolina? What do you, if you had to suggest something to somebody who was going to do a spotlight on North Carolina, what would it be? What are we not talking about?
I think at the upper echelon of food journalism, you know, your sort of mainstream food magazines and larger newspapers, most of them are actually catching on to the fact that North Carolina's food scene has emerged as incredibly diverse and incredibly forward-thinking. We are in step with every sort of metropolitan New York, Los Angeles, Austin, Texas that you can throw out there.
One of the recent articles that I saw in a national food magazine was a spotlight on offal. And I mean O-F-F-A-L, yes. The innards of animals and fish, not awful as in A-W-F-U-L, although, you know,
some
two things
argue
could, you could argue. Is that something that could ever emerge here, or is this a trend that is just happening on the national stage because of its weirdness and it's going to fade?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily that weird. I mean, if you look at North Carolina, we have a liver pudding tradition. If you go to Pembroke's, the chicken liver appetizer has been on the menu since they opened. It's delicious. Over at Mana, they've long made head cheese and various other things along the lines of that. I don't think it's necessarily something that people who are really immersed in traditional North Carolina food would really find all that weird. It's just sort of, if you're part of the audience that enjoys eating modern convenience food, the sort of stuff that shows up on television commercials, it's going to seem weird.
What is head cheese?
cheese is not involved. Think of it as a pate made from all the parts that don't get used elsewhere. Of a pig, generally speaking.
All right. And speaking of that, is bacon starting to fade a little bit? And are we going to other parts of the pig? Jessica Maurer?
I don't know that, excuse me, that bacon will ever fade. but I think in what you were just talking about, I think that it kind of goes back to looking also at, you know, the huge growth of the local and farm-to-table movement. I mean, people are going to be looking at using more of the whole animal and not being wasteful. And, you know, and so I do think that will be on the rise.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking with local food writers Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal and Paul Stephen of the Star News about local food trends. If you'd like to tell us about your favorite eat spot in the area, give us a call, 910-343-1138. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio today, Paul Stephen of the Star News and Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. Today we're talking food, the trends, the highlights, and the must-dos in the region. If you have a question for our food writers today, now is your chance to ask, or you can tell us about your favorite spots, your favorite dishes, your favorite chefs. Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at coastlinehqr. Jessica Maurer, in the most recent restaurant roundup, you wrote about the closing of two restaurants. And Paul Stephen, you probably wrote about this too. The two of you probably tend to overlap a lot when you're talking about openings and closings. But there were two recent closings that were notable. Can you tell us about those?
Well, recently, just in this past issue of the Roundup, I wrote about two closings, the TGI Fridays national chain that was on Oleander Drive, and then Town Tap and Grill in Mayfair Center. And so one, you know, again, being a national chain that's been here for some time, and then another owned by a local restaurant group. So those were the two that I covered most recently. And
entirely different kinds of restaurants,
yes.
Different businesses. But
yes.
do we know what the reasons were behind the closings?
I was not able to gain that much information. You know, I reached out to Circa Restaurant Group here locally. I did not, you know, receive word back from them as to the reason behind their closure.
And they're the owners of the Tap.
Yes, of Town.
Town, yeah.
And they of course own several other restaurants here in town that have been here for some time. I think this was their second concept that they tried in that location at Mayfair. So I did also reach out to the people at Mayfair to see if they had any comment about this. But of course, you know, they were not able to necessarily comment on people that have leased in that spot. However, TGI Fridays said that it was a financial reason for behind the closure of this location.
And is that, do you know if that's a national issue for that restaurant group, or is it a
again,
local?
Again, I inquired as to whether there had been any other closings, particularly in the Southeast region, and I did not receive response to that, so I'm unable to say at this point about that.
Paul Stephen, any insights?
No, her experience is fairly common, especially dealing with large national chains, getting information that's not some condensed form of politic talk. It's tricky. It's challenging. So the explanation she got was actually more than I expected to hear.
So. And there's a new restaurant opening north on Market Street. Johnny Luke's?
Oh, Johnny Luke's. Yes. Sorry about that. Johnny Luke's. Yes. So this is three veteran restaurateurs with ties to North Carolina. Two of them have worked with Outback Steakhouse for 20 plus years. And the other has been with a well-established restaurant in Fayetteville for many years. So yes, they are bringing, it's kind of a dual concept restaurant to the area. And along that corridor, it is sort of heavy with some of the national corporate restaurants, chain restaurants. So they want to bring something that has a little bit more of a local feel. The downstairs of Johnny Luke's will have, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily going to be fine dining, but more, you know, entrees, mid-priced entrees, seafood and steaks and things like that. And then I believe the upstairs are going for more of a pub-style atmosphere. So sandwiches, pub food, craft beer, and live music, kind of a little bit more laid-back vibe up in the upstairs part. So that could be very interesting.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with food writers Paul Stephen of the Star News and Port City Foodies and Jessica Maurer, who writes the restaurant roundup for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. If you have a question or a comment about the local food scene, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Phil Stein has sent an email, and he asks, how realistic is it for a restaurant in Wilmington to go locavore? And which restaurants are doing this best? Paul Stephen.
In North Carolina, it's incredibly easy. We have such a huge farming tradition in this state. I think you will find, if you really start looking into it, that a number of restaurants, the various terms get thrown around, the farm-to-table, locavore. It's different people have different philosophies as far as how they choose to interpret that. Some people say we want to source everything within a 90-mile radius. Some people say we want to source everything within the state. But I think particularly with folks like James Doss at Pembroke's and RX and Jameson Chavez, the chef down at Manna, I mean, it's the list could go on and on. There are quite a few people who take it very seriously in Wilmington. And I think you're finding even with pub grub type places that are opening, they still want grass-fed, locally sourced beef for their burger patties. They still want, if they're going to have fried shrimp, they want North Carolina shrimp in their platter. So I think it's something that you almost have to do as a restaurateur these days if you're going to be an independent business.
Yeah, I think that the consumers are really, that's what they're seeking out. You know, they know that it can be available, and I think consumer demand for that is high and increasing as awareness continues to increase about the benefits of it.
Do you think that it's taken a while to spread from the western part of the state to the eastern part of the state? Were they doing it more prolifically than the eastern part of the state for a while? Or go ahead, Paul Stephen.
Asheville gets a lot of spotlight. I mean, it's a cool city that has a lot going on. It's been kind of the beer capital of the U.S. for years, and food trends certainly emerge there. But I think this part of North Carolina, Wilmington, you know, we're marching in step with most people who are out there. We're not as big, I mean, just population-wise, but I think we still very much care about it.
And speaking of locally sourced food, what about foraging? Is that something that goes on around here? And I'm not talking about dumpster diving, which is a whole separate thing.
Freegans.
Which may be a thing, right. but really, foraged food. I mean, can you walk into a restaurant here and order a dish and have it garnished with clover that somebody picked from under the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge?
I'm sure there are those who have tried. I imagine the health department wouldn't smile upon the idea. Okay.
And I know a lot of places are growing their own herbs and things like that out front, which, you know, I'm not quite sure that we've gotten into the full-fledged foraging yet, but...
Yeah, what Jessica's describing of restaurants growing their own stuff on site or near site, that's I don't want to say it's at every place, but it's pretty common.
Okay. And I Keith Rhodes, for instance, at Catch, he is one of those people, I think, who grows microgreens and garnishes lots of dishes at his restaurant
with
that.
Yeah, definitely.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with local food writers Paul Stephen of the Star News and Port City Foodies, and Jessica Maurer, who writes the restaurant roundup for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. If you have a question or a comment for our food experts today, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Jessica, you've observed there are a lot more beer pairings going on in the area. Can you talk about that trend a little bit, what you're seeing and what kinds of how you might pair a beer with a certain dish?
Sure. I think that especially with the growth of breweries here in Wilmington, and now we have, you know, several breweries making all kinds of great beer right here in town, it really has sort of sparked the relationship between those brewers, most of whom do not serve food at their establishment. But it sparked a relationship with them and our local chefs to kind of come together and work on flavor pairings. And, you know, of course, wine tastings and pairings have been going on for ages. But doing it with beer is, you know, kind of a new fun thing, and not everyone has been to a beer dinner or a beer pairing like that. So I think it's something that gives both the chefs and the brewers something exciting to work on, and I think they enjoy the collaboration of it, finding these foods that work well with certain beers. And I think not only for the restaurants, but it's been a great thing for our food trucks here in town, being able to collaborate with the breweries, come together. It gives them each, you know, an opportunity to showcase what they have to offer.
Food trucks, those were a thing for a while, and then they seemed to not die off completely, but evaporate a little bit. Paul Stephen, what's going on there?
Well, I think what you've seen, what she was talking about with the breweries, we've suddenly got a new venue. None of these, I mean, it's pretty much as old as time. When you want beer, you want something to munch on at the same time. But most of the breweries are not operating as restaurants. Front Street Brewery is the only one that has a full-service kitchen. So these establishments have created a perfect venue for a truck to park at. Consequently, where there's a demand, somebody will fill the void. So we've actually seen that come back around full circle now, where we've got quite a few new food trucks on the scene and a pretty impressive range of cuisines that they're offering. The notion that it's all just taco trucks that some people still have we're way past that.
Yeah. It gives them an opportunity to sell during the week. You know, I think on any given night you can find these food trucks at the local breweries. And again, it just gives them the opportunity instead of just being able to sell at a festival or, you know, on the weekends or whatever. It gives them a chance to be out and about almost every day of the week and expand their business.
We have an email from Carolyn who says the Flying Pie is her place. She says they have wonderful home-cooked food and desserts made from local produce, vegetarian fare daily. Carolyn says she's been a vegetarian for over 42 years, and it's her favorite local restaurant. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with food writers Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal and Paul Stephen of the Star News about local food trends and favorite hot spots. And if you'd like to weigh in, we'd love to hear from you at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Maggie writes, "Hi, is there a trend of up-and-coming vegan dining options in the area? It seems that way to me. And what are the best places to go locally for vegan food?" Paul Stephen.
Wilmington, if the listener isn't aware of it yet, there is a group in Wilmington called Wilmington Vegan. They exist on Facebook as a group and the site wilmingtonvegan.com. And I think you'll find there it's probably the most active community of people who care about this kind of dining. And Sea Level City Gourmet tends to be a favorite spot among the local vegan crowd. But I think what you're finding is almost every restaurant, just like Jessica was mentioning with the farm-to-table response, where you almost have to do it at this point, I think you're finding that you almost have to have vegan, vegetarian options and allergy-sensitive options on your menu if you're going to bother keeping your doors open. You know, in an industry where the margins are so thin, those small percentages really do matter. So I mean, we're not to the point yet where we have a dedicated vegan restaurant, but we're probably not far off.
And we have a tweet from Julia. She says, she's asking our guests, have you had the burger at Winnie's Tavern? And she says, yum.
I have not had the burger at Winnie's Tavern, and that has been on my list of places to go for a long time because I do love burgers, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I have not had their burger.
We desperately need to remedy that situation.
Maybe today.
Yeah. Is this coming from an experienced Winnie Tavern burger eating person, Paul Steven?
Well, Winnie's is located, if the listeners aren't familiar with Winnie's, it's on Burnett Boulevard, and it's within eyeshot of the port. It's a dusty, dank little section of town in sort of an industrial pocket. It's also my neighborhood. I live in Sunset Park and absolutely love the place over there. And Winnie's is fortunately within walking distance. So yeah, I'm familiar with what they do in the best way possible.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking food with local writers Paul Steven of the Star News and Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And a caller who didn't want to leave their name says, where do you like to go for casual dining? Asheville has many options for tasty but cheaper food. I know there's Manna and Catch, but those are expensive. Where can one find food that isn't bland and doesn't cost a lot? Suggestions, Paul Steven.
I recently had this sort of fast casual dining trend where it's kind of upper end food idea, but done in sort of a quick serve format. A place recently opened in Mayfair called Positalia, which if they're not familiar with, is fun just to go through to watch the process of how they make a salad. I think you're seeing more and more places like that open up. And of course, Epic Food Company you can get an excellent meal there for a very reasonable price. There are a number of places like that, specifically in that part of town as well.
What's unique about the way they make salads at Positalia?
It's fun. You go in and they'll essentially begin with a giant salad bowl, and it's like a big stainless steel mixing bowl kind of that you would use in the kitchen, and the various parts are put into it and mixed there as you pick and choose and go through the assembly line. So it's a salad built right there in front of you.
That's great. There are some locations in this town that seem to have unprecedented turnover, and that is an unscientific observation. But we talked earlier about how restaurants, if they don't have their A game when they open, might have a really hard time gaining ground. And Paul Steven, a couple of times during this conversation, you've observed that there is a really thin margin in this business. But what are some of those challenges? Why is it so hard to make a go of it?
Well, Jessica. I think oftentimes just the expenses are so high. You know, leasing property is very high. You know, there's so many any number of challenges as far as you know, all the expenses that go into operating a restaurant. And I think most of the time that it just comes down to, you know, can you sell enough in order to meet all those demands.
And you've observed, Paul Steven, that you really need to have an entrepreneurial mindset to be able to do this.
Well, if you're the kind of shopper who goes into a place like Whole Foods and sees a salmon fillet at $20 a pound and balk at the idea, to expect a restaurant to be able to sell that for anything less, I mean, they have material costs the same way you do as a home cook. And you really have to be able to transform that into something magical to justify the sort of prices that you're going to charge. And you have to know your business every bit as well as your food. And the folks who I've had the opportunity to meet who have really succeeded have that first and foremost in their mind. I mean, of course, ultimately, at the end of the day, it always comes down to the food. But
But it's a very careful balance, like you say, between having that food and the service and then, you know, the business sense that goes along with it, being able to, you know, make those numbers work, too. And that is really a challenge, especially, I think, for people that, you know, don't necessarily have the business background. If you're a trained culinarian and you really want to, you know, get out there and have your own restaurant. But I think that the business side of things can be very, very tricky. Even if you go into it, you know, with some background and some support, that side can become overwhelming quickly.
When you look at a restaurant that's closed that you enjoyed, can you usually pinpoint as a food writer sort of why that happened? Yeah, we were expecting that. Are there any real head scratchers for you that have happened in the last year or two, Paul Steven?
Not particularly. I mean, it's always a heartbreak when they go. You know, places like Nine Bakery and Lounge on Front Street, absolutely love the place. You know, that's conditions that are out of control. You know, it can be everything from economics to health to, I mean, you name it. Mm-hmm. Anything can cause a closure, and it's just sometimes you see it coming, sometimes you don't.
You're listening to Coastline, talking with local food writers Jessica Maurer and Paul Stephen. If you'd like to weigh in, we have one more segment left, and we are going to talk with Aaron from Wrightsboro. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
Hello. Welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Do you have a question, or did you want to make a comment?
No, maybe a quick question and a slight comment is... Early this year, there was a big Facebook blast by Flamin' Amy's saying they were looking to put in either a bowl or a burrito, I'm not sure, out in North Chase. I guess my question is that really a happening, or if it's not? And then my comment would be, is there anything looking to go out in North Chase? Because I work out there, and it seems to be sort of a black hole for restaurants other than Uncle Louie's.
And for those who aren't familiar with where North Chase is, can you sort of describe it geographically, Aaron?
North Chase is sort of just before college becomes college. It's still the end of I-40 or 132. Laney High School is out there, and there's quite a bit of an industrial complex out there just before you get into Wilmington if you're headed east on I-40.
So what do we know about Flaming Amy's and their plans? Are they scuttled? Were they real?
The last I spoke with them, they were moving ahead with franchising plans for the bowl. They did not have plans to expand the burrito barn. As I last spoke with them, they were moving forward, you know, with Flaming Amy's bowl. But I have not heard of any specific locations. I actually did reach out to them just a week or so ago. And so I'm not sure if things have stalled a little bit or just, you know, still in the preliminary stages. But unfortunately, I don't have anything to report as far as a specific location.
Any place that we could send Aaron out in the North Chase part of town? Any ideas? Paul Stephen?
I have to say that, you know, that is sort of a black hole for restaurants out there. You know, I mean, there's not, I don't know. Although there's a large residential community out there. And as Aaron mentioned, you know, a lot of people work out there. So it's somewhat surprising that we haven't seen more growth in that area. I don't know of anything in the works, unfortunately.
Aaron, sorry we couldn't be more help on that front, but perhaps that will encourage some local restaurateurs who've been thinking about opening to look at North Chase. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a conversation about food with local foodie writers Paul Stephen of the Star News and Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. We're going to go to a brief break, and when we come back, we'll take a couple of calls. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, food writers Paul Stephen of the Star News and Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. If you have a question about local cuisine or would like to suggest an undiscovered eatery, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Paul from Burgaw, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, I was saying, telling the lady who took my call that years ago when I was in the Navy, we had, you know, food trucks come to our job sites, and we used to refer to them as gee-dunk trucks or roach coaches. Not saying that the food was bad. It was just, you know, something, military nomenclature. But for local restaurants, I like Zoe's out there in Mayfair.
Zoe's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yes.
And is that a national chain or is that a locally owned business?
I think it's nationally. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Paul, thank you so much for weighing in.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Coastline, talking with local food writers Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal and Paul Stephen of the Star News about food trends. If you'd like to give them a tip that they can explore, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. And we had a message left, Amy from Ogden. I think we've since lost her, but she says, I'm a realtor in town, and I always try to make sure I'm aware of opening restaurants for my clients. Thank you so much for your call, Amy. And we haven't really gotten to booze yet. We've talked a little bit about food pairings and beer, which is becoming a thing, as both of you have observed. But Paul Stephen, I understand that you've been diving pretty deeply into some alcohol numbers and looking at consumption among New Hanover County residents.
Well, we had this great idea to take a look at what North Carolina drinks and where we drink it, which sounded glamorous when it was first assigned to me. I didn't realize that would mean spending most of my nights with a 420-page PDF file and creating thousands of Excel documents with cell after cell filled with just numbers. So, yeah, we've been really taking a close look at what the state sold in terms of cases of alcohol across the entire region, and trying to localize that as much as we can to look at the trends and where they've emerged. And North Carolina is very much a vodka state. New Hanover County is right in line with that, but we do march to a different beat in certain areas. We consume about twice the state average of Irish whiskey here in town, thanks largely in part to places like Sláinte that have put tremendous effort into expanding their Irish whiskey selection. But you'll find other interesting trends emerging around the region, like the tiny town of Warsaw, for reasons that I haven't had an opportunity to dive into yet, is one of the lowest vodka-consuming counties in the region, but they enjoy their brandies almost six times the rate of the state average. Yeah, it's really quite interesting when you start looking at the minutiae of the details as far as what people are drinking and where.
That is so interesting. If we have any Warsawians listening to the program, is that a thing? Give us a call at 910-343-1138 and tell us about your brandy drinking habits. And we have Simon from Wilmington. Simon, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good. I got a question for anyone in the booth right now. So, and I think this pertains especially to Paul, and I'm sorry, I forgot the other food
writer's name. Jessica Maurer, yeah.
Hey, Jessica.
Hi,
but my question is, so being food writers, you guys are obviously aware of the pedigree of kitchens and the kind of food that is available in, you know, neighboring cities around us, because this is what you do. So we've got Durham that's got Restaurant One that's like off the charts. You've got Charleston who's got all these great restaurants. And what is keeping Wilmington, in your opinion, from reaching those heights, to getting to that point? Because we've got a lot of restaurants here that try, but we're not husked. We don't have a husk. We don't have a Restaurant One. Why is that?
Well, I think we have a lot of restaurateurs who would love to have a husk, who would love to have a Restaurant One.
And just so our listeners are up to speed, husk is?
It's a restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina, run by more or less internationally known Chef Sean Brock at this point. He's become sort of a household name for people who are hardcore food nerds like myself.
And that city also has quite the foodie pedigree.
Of course.
It probably has one of the most outstanding foodie pedigrees in the country. And as the caller mentioned, the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area has really emerged as a super strong scene as well. We certainly are isolated in our way here to a degree. I mean, we're 2 hours from everything where we're at. And it's hard to say. You've seen a lot of entrepreneurs really try to sell that kind of product here in this town. And at the end of the day, if they're not buying, they can't keep it on the menu, or they can't keep the doors open, regardless of what it is that they're putting on the menu. And it's something that I think you've seen really, it's certainly turned around in the last 5 to 10 years. You know, when I first moved here, this was not a movement that people were talking about, period. And I think it's something that is now at least part of our collective consciousness when we're talking about food and how it's evolving in the Cape Fear region.
All right, Simon, thanks so much for your call. And we have Matthew from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and make two recommendations on two great local restaurants that me and my girlfriend have discovered in town. One of them is Fork and Cork downtown, and the other is Dainty Sushi on New Center.
New Center Drive near the Target Shopping Center.
Yes, exactly.
All right, and Fork and Cork, that's something that has been in the news recently.
Yeah. I think they were named to at least one, if not two, of the top burger joint lists for the state of North Carolina. So although they're fairly new to the scene, they are getting a lot of press.
That's what it was. Matthew, before you go, what's your favorite dish at both of those places?
The Kreider.
My girlfriend would recommend the Kreider. They have a lobster chowder that's just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And
Danky, anything is delicious. Anything,
pretty much everything on their menu is great. Chef Danny does a really good job.
All right, that's great. Thank you both so much for the call. And do we have Amy from Ogden?
Yes.
Hi. Amy. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. Actually, thank you for having me. I just wanted to say I was the one who is the realtor, and I always try to show my clients from out of town and tell them about Wilmington kind of through the food, because it does tell so much about the area. And if we're out and about looking at homes and it's during lunchtime, I try to take them to a place that will show kind of what that particular area is like, to get a flavor for the local, the people and the art and the food and the smells and all the good stuff.
Well, Amy, what do you think? What's an example of a place that's emblematic of Wilmington?
Well, for somebody, I had heard him mention something about Sunset Park. It's one of my favorite neighborhoods for people who want to live close to downtown. And I always take them over to Jester's Java on Castle Street, because it's such a great way to get a feel for that particular area. You walk in and people are reading the New York Times. And there's art on the wall, and people are saying hello because they come in there every day, and everybody knows each other, and there's just great conversation, and it's just a really great atmosphere. Or someplace like, if you're looking out toward the Pender County area, someplace like Lane's Ferry, which a lot of people don't know about, but it's so close by, and it sort of shows people from out of town a big contrast between, you can drive 15 minutes out and find this cute little, screened-in porch place by the river where you can get the best, one of the best barbecue or burgers in town, or someplace like Jester's that has amazing food there, all kinds of great sandwiches and soups and salads. But it really does help. Where if they want something a little higher end, go to something like Taste the Olive over by Landfall that has amazing food. I mean, it's just, I think Wilmington is underrated when it does come to food. Like the other gentleman was saying, how can we kind of get the level of some of these other large, lived near D.C., and I've lived in smaller towns, but Wilmington seems to be the perfect combination of both of those things kind of all rolled in. So I try to find restaurants that kind of symbolize that for people who are trying to get a feel for the area. And I wonder if they write kind of to that for when people are visiting and they want to know, how can I know about Wilmington if I go to a particular restaurant?
That's a really good question. Amy, thanks so much for your call. Paul, Stephen, I saw you nodding vigorously and smiling a lot when she was describing some of these places.
Well, I lit up particularly at Lane's Ferry just thinking about hot dogs, and now I might have to go for a drive for lunch. It's certainly one of my favorite destinations in Pender County.
And we have Lauren from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for having me. And I tuned in a little bit late, so I'm not sure if you've already discussed Pinpoint on Front Street. The new restaurant opened, back in June. And I'm new to town, so I'm just still getting the lay of the land and a feel for the restaurant scene here. But it strikes me that Pinpoint might be the most important restaurant in Wilmington right now. And I think that because the chef there cooked for 10 years for Hugh Atchison in Athens, Georgia, who we know won the James Beard Award. And the thought that the chef at Pinpoint chose Wilmington in which to open his first restaurant, when a young chef reaches a certain level and then decides to strike out on his own to make his own name, and then he chooses Wilmington to do that, I think that says really good things about what's happening here. And the sort of forward and upward momentum that is happening in the food community here.
So, Lauren, you're actually holding up Pinpoint as sort of being on the cutting edge of what's happening here in the food world.
Absolutely. I think they're doing really great work, and it's really exciting for me that they're here. I've just moved down from Brooklyn where, there are so many wonderful things to eat, and I'm still discovering lots of great food here, but I found out about Pinpoint before I moved here, but after it, I decided to move here, and I thought, this is a really good sign, because frankly, I think Wilmington could be the next big food city in the South. I think it's got a beautiful historic downtown. It sort of feels like a secret still. When I tell people I've moved here, they're not quite sure where they think I'm moving to Delaware. And but there are so many really wonderful things going on here in food. And I just hold Pinpoint up as an example of a restaurant that's doing great work and does seem to be at the leading edge of not just trends, but an aesthetic and a philosophy of food that really the rest of the country seems to be pretty wrapped with at the moment. So I think it's a really good sign for the direction things are going in here.
That's great. Lauren, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Coastline, talking with local food writers Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal and Paul Stephen of the Star News about food trends, hot spots, what's happening on the foodie scene in the Cape Fear region. And if you'd like to send us an email and weigh in, we have about 5 minutes left in the show, and that email address is coastline@whqr.org. Let's talk briefly about food festivals, because we have a lot of those in the state of North Carolina. And Paul Stephen, you wrote about the Blueberry Festival. You were, in fact, a judge of some of the food offerings at the Blueberry Festival, were you not?
Like I say, I really can't complain about my job. I've had the opportunity to help judge the Blueberry Festival's recipe contest for the last few years. And there are far worse ways to earn a paycheck in this life. And
What were some of the emerging wonderful things that came out of the Blueberry Festival? I mean, we all think about blueberry pie and blueberry ice cream, right, and cobbler and, you know, those sorts of predictable things. But what were some of the stranger dishes that came out that worked?
Well, it's pretty extensive the way they break it down up there. There are maybe 8 or 9 different categories, ranging from savory dishes to drinks to there's a kids category. And frankly, I think the most interesting thing we've seen is kids are cleaning up. The simple recipes that anyone can do, you know, be it an 8-year-old chef or an 88-year-old chef, were the ones that tended to beat the more complicated, fussy things that people were entering. I believe it was a children's recipe that won the overall at least 3 years in a row up there.
And what was the overall?
Oh, gosh. This year it was a cake that was made with lemon and blueberry, sort of a coffee cake thing. But in the past, it's been blueberry fritters. It's been a lot of things that would seem familiar and comfortable.
What are some of the other really great food festivals that we have around this area? I'm thinking there's one coming up in September in Hampstead.
The Spot Festival,
yes
that's certainly a traditional one. The Oyster Festival down in Brunswick County is big in October.
And for folks who aren't familiar with spots, what are they?
They are a small panfish that are caught in huge abundance up and down the coast here.
Is this something that foodies are into or not? Or is this just, how did that become a festival? If we only eat them once a year when the festival happens, why did we build a festival around spots?
If you're only eating spot once a year, there's something that needs to be reevaluated.
Okay. All right.
go to your local fish market. They've been all over the counters for years and years and in huge quantities. It's really a very common fish in the area and a fairly affordable one that's usually $2 to $3 a pound.
We actually had somebody weigh in. Diana from Wilmington says she's also a fan of Pinpoint. She says Pinpoint's food is unique without being weird. It's such a great restaurant. We just have a couple of minutes left in the show. What is the strangest dish that the two of you have ever encountered in this market?
Oh, my goodness. I have to think about that for a minute. The strangest dish.
And while you're thinking about that, what are the must-go places? What are the new – we've heard lots of talk about Pinpoint, which is the hot new place. But what are some other places, if somebody's new to town, that you guys would recommend?
For me, I am happiest with a meal when it comes between two slices of bread. So if you haven't made it to South College Deli yet, go and get a sandwich. They've been there for 10 years and more, and they've been doing it right.
Jessica Maurer?
I don't know. I have to say I'm a huge fan of Mexican food, so I love K38 and Las Olas and those restaurants. I also think that we have some great Asian food in town. Of course, Indochine has always been a favorite, Southern Thai, Saigon Bistro. Those are some of my favorites.
That's a good list. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Paul Stephen of the Star News and Jessica Maurer of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who called in, emailed, and tweeted your comments. Join us for Coastline every Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell. Our webmaster is Melissa Stone. If you missed part of this show, we'll post it on our website at whqr.org. You can also download the podcast from iTunes, and there you can find podcasts of earlier shows. Thanks again for listening. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.